Welcome to Share the Bytes, episode 18, Bus Off the Grid. Hello, Sean, and welcome to Share the Bytes. Great to have you on.
Oh, it's great to be here, Ian. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've chatted together, and we're going to talk about something exciting that you've been working on.
Yep. We're going to talk about solar power, being off the grid, on the grid, or supplementing power, you know, from basically weaning ourselves off of this, the power supply that we get from power companies.
Fantastic. So, yeah, let's talk about that. So you got started because you have a bus that you purchased, and mm-hmm. it was used as kind of a tiny house, mobile home setup. And you mentioned that it originally had a gas generator for all the electrical needs in there, which, you know, here in California, that's really not sustainable. And you're converting it over to mm-hmm. solar panels. So why don't you get us started on first, what was the drive to do this conversion? And then, yeah, walk us through the things that you've learned doing this work.
Sounds good. Well, the drive originally was that a lot of people do tiny houses. They do buses. I happen to fall upon a very nice, what we refer to as a rock star bus. So it was designed to be used by someone who travels a lot. The generator was designed. It's got a 15,000 watt generator. It was designed to be run all the time. So they didn't really build it for efficiency. It was also designed to be used in Florida with two air conditioning units running constantly to keep it cool. Now, with that said, was that when I parked it and have been living in it for months now, the electrical consumption of it was fairly high, like closer to basically when I was living in my own house, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage. I was drawing fairly similar amount of electricity, if not more, in some occasions. And so so I decided that I wanted to, I wanted to make something that could be used away from a power source like a grid and not have to run what essentially is a very loud, amazingly loud 15,000 watt generator.
Yeah, I'm quite sure your neighbors wouldn't appreciate that either.
Nope. As a matter of fact, when I brought the bus home, I ran it the very first night, and I had pretty much every neighbor tell me never to do that again. So that was like, I either have to put an incredible muffler system on it, or figure something else out. Now the problem is that the generator itself burns about a gallon to 2 gallons an hour, depending on the load, which is not very affordable. You know, the current cost of diesel, you're looking between $4 and $8 an hour. Just to run the electrical and, of course, the maintenance and everything else on the generator to keep it going. And, of course, the neighbors that just absolutely will never be your friend again. So I started looking into solar panels. I've been into renewable energy for a long time. Being that this is a very large bus, it is 45 feet in length and the maximum width of 102 inches, which makes it literally the biggest thing you can put down the road as a single bus structure. It also has a lot of, surface area for solar panels. Solar panels have, since I started looking into them, the efficiency wasn't as high as it is now. And so it wasn't as practical to put a solar array on something like this and then still use the kind of power that I would like to use, in living in a bus and, playing music and doing the other things that I do. Using computers and things like that on a consistent basis. But they have shrunk down and made panels much more efficient in the past like 5+ years. And so I kept running the numbers on it and I went, there's enough square footage on this with proper panels and everything and a battery structure to completely take it off the grid and not really suffer a whole lot as far as use of electricity. So that's kind of where things got started with it. And so from there, I started putting together this project, and like I said, I'm in the middle of it now. So we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah, very cool. So, yeah, why don't you tell us some of the things you've learned about this? So you were talking about that when you're researching the solar, you're taking it completely off grid, and you had mentioned mm-hmm. that there are different power requirements and loads that you can do. You know, people, when they're thinking of electricity, they think of wall outlets. You know, that's AC power. You know, batteries are DC, and you're running the solar and you're going completely off grid. So you're running that captured energy into batteries. Now, are you running a 12 volt system, 24 or 48 volt?
So, well, I'm deciding right now between 24 and 48 volt systems. The current one that I'm using at this moment that is actually powering some of the things in the bus, which is kind of a test system I put together, 800 watts into a 400 amp hour battery array at 12 volts. And so that gives me about, five kilowatt battery supply, but again, it's lead acid, so you can't use the whole thing. So, so basically what I started off with is a 12 volt system with a 12 volt inverter, and 800 watts of panels just to kind of test everything out. This was kind of a basic system I bought off of Craigslist that, you know, I paid very nominal for. It came with batteries, it came with everything. It was just enough for me to kind of test and see how feasible my numbers were, like the numbers that, for example, with the current configuration, I was never able to, with an 800 watt array in full sun, to ever pull more than 400 watts. Now, I didn't spend a lot of time trying to work through that, because it was just kind of a test system, but it gives you an idea of what, the actual real world numbers are starting to come out with. As I go forward with this, again, the technology is that I'm going to be putting into it, that I'm actually going to be attaching, is going to be a little bit more than that. But yes, and so it looks like I'm really on the fence about, and we'll find out in the next one, is I'm looking towards going to a 48 volt system. And the reason for this is that, I've been measuring the power that I've been using. I've got this application on my phone that is, it's called Emporia Energy. It's kind of one of the, I think Sense was the one that they were always doing on Facebook. But basically you're putting an AC monitoring system into your AC panel, and you can start seeing where you're using your power, how much power you're using, things like that. And when I put all that together, I found that, you know, when I run the air conditioning, only one bank on it now, that I'm running about a maximum of just under 4,000 watts at a single time, with a consistent usage of between 200 and 400 watts, throughout the rest of the day, then having a peak of about 3,000. So I opted for a 6,000 watt inverter. Problem with that is again, everything, when you start getting into power, doing AC and DC, you really come down to measuring everything in watts, because your amps and your voltage is going to change a lot. So, for example, if you have a 24 volt battery bay and you're powering a 120 volt system, your amperage is a lot more as you go to supply power to it. So you end up, because your voltage is so low at 12 volts, that when you go to supply, for example, 1 amp at 110, you're looking at 10 amps of 12 volts. Now, if you go to a 48 volt system, then it supply the same singular amp, it's 1/4 of the amperage at 48 volts, because if you go, 12 to 24, it takes it in half. And from then again, 48 takes it in half one more time. Now, the advantage of that is that when you start to reach these higher amperage loads, something, if you want to do like a 6,000 watt inverter, which, by the way, is typically enough to run most households of average to, small to medium size, most of what, if you have a mansion, obviously that's not going to be enough, but it is enough to run, most houses. But what will happen is that, is because the overall wattage is rather high, you want the voltage to be high also, which will keep your amperage down. Which, and as a rule of thumb, they want to say that at any consistent use of time or consistent use of, you know, extended power, you should be under 100 amps. If your system is consistently running over 100 amps, then you're stressed, you know, you're going to have just more loss in your in your battery cables, things like that. And you're also going to have you're going to have to spend a lot more because most things are not designed you know, on the consumer grade to go much above 100 to 250 amps. So it really comes down to the key thing about designing a system is trying to keep your amperage low and still maintain the same amount of watts. So again, if you want more power, you want more watts and you up your battery voltage for your battery bank, then you can have, for example, the same amount of amperage on a 12 volt system that's built. You could have four times the amount of wattage on a 48 volt system, but it would still be the same amount of amperage. So you could use theoretically all the same wiring and everything as you would for a 12 volt, but you'd be able to supply more power to your system on 48.
Okay. So, and you're saying, you're recommending the 48 volts, you know, particularly again for your usage and again for the bus, which would be, you know, a small house, you know, when we talk about these tiny houses. What about, you know, people might have questions about like the van life. You're talking like smaller vans, minivans or small cargo vans. Does 48 volts maybe make that sense, or maybe they should do 12 or 24 volts since, you know, they're running maybe, you know, something smaller or and you're with less equipment in there? What do you think?
Well, I definitely believe that if you're, you know, again, it's on your overall. The other part is that if you're using, for example, this for the bus, 48 volts is almost a little bit of a jump for me. 24 volts would have been a little bit more comfortable. Again, you're because I'm using 6 volt batteries, and so I'm going to have to take 8 6-volt batteries to get to my 48 volts. Now, if I want those, you have to buy them at the same time. So it becomes a little cost prohibitive, whereas like a 12 volt system, and if you have less amperage draw or using less power or sorry, wattage all over, then you definitely kind of want to keep it smaller. And I think all too is that when you talk about something like van life, a van is a very small vehicle. And as soon as you get away from 12 volts, then you have to either convert it, you know, convert your power to a 12 volt or to a 120 AC, for example, to run fans and things like that. What a lot of people do when doing something like van life and putting solar panels, first off, vans are small. You can't put a whole big array on there. So you're not going to end up with a lot of power anyways. And I find that just getting a very good true sine inverter at a 12 volt system will allow you to then tie back into the van. For example, you'd be able to charge your van battery, listen to your stereo, all the stuff directly off of the 12 volt system without any conversion or anything else from there. So I would say that to start with something like van life, I would see a 12 volt system being most desirable because it's going to integrate and work with everything that you already have.
Okay. Very cool. And it kind of helps segue into something that you just mentioned, that you had to tie 6 batteries together in order to get to your 48 volt system. And that's when we start talking about linking batteries either in serial or parallel. So can you go in and describe the difference between there and the pros and cons of each?
Yeah. So, the thing is that happens is that when it comes to deep cycle lead acid batteries, now we're talking about the standard battery that's in your car, technology, nothing like lithium ion, anything like that. Standard lead acid battery, it has, a cell voltage of approximately 1.2 volts. I believe, is that correct? Let's see, 1.22462. Yeah, because a 6 volt has 3. There we go. Lead acid cell voltage. 2 volts. Fair enough. There we go. 2.1. That's where I knew that math wasn't right. Okay. So we're back here. So So typically with a lead acid battery, each cell has got a voltage of approximately 2.1 volts. Being that when you have a, you have your typical 12 volt battery at resting without being charged, will have a base open circuit voltage of approximately 12.6 volts when it's fully charged. So the problem with that is that as people build bigger battery banks and bigger battery arrays, they actually start to decrease the voltage of the battery. So your typical 12 volt battery is what everybody's used to. When you start getting into arrays, they start using 6 volt batteries and eventually single cell 2.1 volt batteries, a massive battery, bigger than your car battery, but only 2.1 volts. And then if you put enough of them together, what you end up with is a higher voltage with a higher amperage amp hour rating. Now, when we go into amp hours is one of the key ways to understand what the battery has the ability to put out in power. It eventually always comes down to watts, which is amps times volts. Also, amp hours times volts gives you your watt hours. And so these are typically done, what the battery will discharge either. The typical amp hour rating is over the course of 20 hours. They do have several other ways of measuring batteries. I won't really go into a whole lot of those right now. We'll just stick with the amps and volts to kind of get an idea. I will be referring to all the amp hours in a 20. It's over the course of 20 hours. They do have different time frames in which they pull the power from, because if you pull more power from a battery, it won't necessarily be able to sustain the same amount of power if you were to pull it out over a slower amount of time. So what you have here is that I use 6 volt batteries because when they start to get larger, and each one of my 6 volt batteries are 210 amp hours. So when I, the way I have them now is I have 4 of them. At this moment, I'm going to get another set of 4, but I started off with 4. And I put 2 of the batteries into series, and then I put 2 into parallel. So I took 1 6-volt battery, and I went from the absolute negative, and then I took the positive of that and connected it to the negative of the next battery, and then pulled that out of the absolute negative. So I go from positive to negative, stringing the 2 batteries together. So it ends up that the battery becomes 12 volts because the voltage is now, when you put them in series, the voltage will increase. The amps or the amp hours will not. When you put things into parallel, they will stay the same. So you still, now your wattage overall will increase. It will double the wattage. And that's why we measure a lot of this stuff now. When you get into solar and off grid, you start measuring things off of watts, because that's really the source of the power. That's what you're really able to use. Because even though, and a lot of people get confused with this, because they go, why would I take, a 6 volt battery and another 6 volt battery, put them together and make 12 volts and they don't have any more amp hours. But if you do the math, you go, let's say it's a 200, well, that's mine's 210, but for simple math, let's just say that it's 200 at 6 volts. So that's giving us a 1200 watt hour battery. Now, when you put the two of them together, you end up with a 2400 watt hour battery array. So the power has increased, even though one of the sides of the mathematics has not. And so what I did was, so for example, so I have these 4 batteries, I have them at 12 volts. So I put 2 of them in series and 2 of them in parallel. And parallel means it's positive to positive, negative to negative. When you do positive to positive, negative to negative, you end up with increasing the amps in it. So now when you run things in parallel, your amperage goes up. And so as your amperage goes up, so your voltage will remain the same because they're in parallel. Now your amperage is going up. But that ended up with me having a 400 plus amp hour array at 12 volts. And so that's what I'm starting with right now.
Okay, very cool. And you said you were using currently lead acid batteries, but those are not the only batteries on the market that you could use for something like this, correct?
That is correct. And again, this isn't something I will go into because there's tons of different batteries. Like you said, lead acid is your standard ones that you have in a car. You can open them up. You can see the acid in them before them on your clothes. It'll dissolve unless they're polyester. I just found that out today. So if you're from the 70s and you spill a battery on you, it won't eat your clothes. But other than that, yeah. Yeah, so disco, if it comes back, everyone's safe from batteries. But so then
break
you
out
go,
the bell bottoms.
Right, and break out the bell bottoms. Now, the thing is with lead acid is that, again, it goes back to having a depth of discharge of about 50%. So, for example, if I'm going to, like, currently I have approximately about a 5 kilowatt array that I have put together for my batteries. I'm going to take it to 10,000 kilowatt or 10 kilowatts. Sorry, not 10,000, 10 kilowatt. But the problem is that with a lead acid system, I am only able to use safely 50% of the battery's energy before you start to damage or lessen the life of your battery. If you continuously take a lead acid battery beyond 50%, it will shorten the lifespan of it. Now they have gel and they have the AMG batteries. Which are the Optima. I won't really go into those a whole lot because they're basically just versions of a lead acid battery. What really comes into being interesting is the lithium ions or similar style batteries, which is what they're, you know, Tesla's using in their cars and everything like that. What makes it kind of interesting towards this off-grid system is that, you know, a lot of the charge controllers and a lot of stuff have started to go towards being able to support lithium ion as it's becoming more popular. And one of the fun things is too, is that you have all these cars and people are, you know, Teslas and the, what are the ones that were the hybrid that first came out, Prius, if you're in Britain,
the Prius, yeah.
Yep. And so these all have, have these, battery packs in them that, you know, reach a service life and then they're changed and they're still within a usable service life. And so they can be picked up for fairly affordable, or if you get a car that was in an accident or something like that, you get a battery array that is, you know, a little bit out of your price range normally if you were to buy it brand new, but can be discounted. For example, that I've been seeing about 7 kilowatt battery arrays going for approximately $1,000 on eBay. Now, what's really nice about this is now remember that I said that I'm putting together when I'm done with this, I'm going to spend $1,000 on lead acid batteries to get a 10 kilowatt battery array. Now, the lithium ion battery array, that's $1,000 and this is 7 kilowatt. It sounds like it's going to be less power, but the lithium ion batteries can be more, they can be more deeply discharged. So you can discharge a lithium ion battery to 80 to 90% of its capacity, just like you would with your phone and everything else. It's like, you know, they tell you not to run your phone all the way down. You want to stop it at about 20-30% or something. You know, keep good battery health, but you can drain it all the way down. It's okay. They will be able to, you know, recuperate. And so then again, so you're looking at that same kilo, you know, you're saying like, yeah, it's less kilowatts. It's less kilowatts as an array, but you can use more of it. So for example, if we're talking about 90% of a 7,000 kilowatt array versus 50% of a 10,000 or yeah, sorry, 10 kilo, I always do this 10 kilowatt array that, you're actually going to get more power out of the lithium ion setup than you would out of the lead acid at the same price. Now, of course, that's not what you're going to get as a price when you go into, you know, buy something new. They're going to be a little bit more expensive, but, you know, of course, battery prices are coming down. And the other thing is that we're not even talking about longevity factor and amount of cycles because, you know, when you get a prop, when you spend the money, you get a proper lithium ion battery, you'll find that the cycles are much higher. The life is much higher. And overall, in the, you know, your initial investment is going to cost you more, but the longevity and use and payback out of it is going to offset the initial costs almost instantly.
Yeah, and certainly if you're not churning batteries over as quickly, you know, that's less waste in the landfills, which is always good.
Now, which also comes to another fun part, though, is that lead acid, being that it's such a, you know, old battery, like I said, it goes back to even the Baghdad battery. It's such an old technology that it does also have the ability to be recycled in a more simplistic way. I mean, it's lead, it's acid. They also have, and this is just something I wanted to touch on real quick, for those who want to start with a simple system and want to kind of play around with it. Typically, like I am, we start with lead acid just because they're laying around, you can get them. The thing to remember about, you know, lead acid batteries, they need to be properly taken care of. You never want to buy one that is not at its proper voltage of, you know, basically 2.1 volts per cell, or a total of 12.6 if you're, you know, putting everything on a 12 volt scale. If you go to look at a battery and somebody's been sitting in the garage and it's a 10.9 volts, you want to be suspicious of it. But on the flip side is that there is a lot of techniques and ways that you can extend and renew old lead acid batteries. They have a process called desulfonization. Sulfur buildup that happens when you discharge a battery, and the chemical process switches as the acid becomes absorbed and the power gets drained out, that it starts to create these little sulfur crystals. And it starts to create a plating on the lead plates of your battery. And so they have this, they have these little doodads you can buy. I bought one for $100, but you know, being that I'm spending $1,000 on batteries, it's not that much, of a price increase, that will send out a pulse, and they will dissolve the sulfur crystals, form in the, as the battery is being charged and discharged. One of the things that caused that, for example, is not having the battery array fully charged. It suggested that if you're going to use a lead acid battery or almost any type of battery, you want the system to be able to end up reaching a full charge at least a couple times a month. So, and that's one of the things that, you know, again, like I bought my batteries used. I knew about this process. So, I actually got the entire 800 watt solar array, two charge controllers, and the battery array for $1,000. It kind of just gave me enough to start with, whereas, you know, the batteries are $100 and some a piece, yada yada. It was enough for me to kind of test everything out. I knew that the batteries were, you know, possibly going to be, they were kept. I talked to the guy. He did everything. He said once a month he did a flood charge. He charged the batteries up to, you know, again, keep the batteries in good working condition. And then, of course, when I got them and I used them, I treated them very well. And again, that's one of the things with lead acid is it's like, again, that the cost is deferred in the beginning, but you're talking about higher maintenance and doing stuff to keep them in good working order. But with a proper understanding of batteries, and you can do that, and you can find yourself, you know, getting started with little or no money. If you can get something that somebody's just getting rid of, and then bring the battery back. I won't go too much into that, but there's a lot of stuff you can look up on YouTube about not recycling the battery, but they have a name for it. The guy,
if it's not rejuvenate, then, you know, there's reinvigorate, there's refresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they would be, that's kind of like a rebuild, but anyways, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of tricks. There's some additives, there's things. The basic problem that, and I'll just go in the last point when it comes to lead acid batteries. There's two major reasons that lead acid batteries start to fail. The first one is, you know, basically the buildup on the plates, creating resistance, reducing the electrical current. That is something that can be remedied with home remedies and very simple techniques. The other one that is not repairable is when the cells, the lead plates themselves, degrade and start touching each other. And they become, there becomes a physical contact between the two of them, thus short circuiting that sellout, and that can't be repairable. And the way to test that is, again, like I said, if the battery can hold a a voltage of approximately 12 volts or above for any significant amount of time, by like a day or two, then you mostly do not have a shorted cell. And then there are things you can do to bring a battery back, you know, being that battery arrays are so expensive. And of course, if it does, if it's something that when you charge it up and within 24 hours, it drops below 12 volts, most likely you have a bad cell. Yeah. And then there is no real repair for that. So
yeah, very cool. So as we wrap things up here, I think the last point is, again, so you've talked about the, you know, battery, the voltage, you know, kilowatt hours, you know, measuring out, you know, what is your need. You've talked about the battery types and particularly, you know, how to start out, you know, where the cost is. But so once you have all this up and running, now you need to think about, okay, so you've got your solar panels, you've got your batteries, now you got to charge them. And so those are going to take charge controllers. And then those have to be sized also with your panel, your solar panel array. So why don't you touch on that and talk about the charge controllers and panel efficiencies.
Okay. So now to start off with, I'm going to start with the what's called a PWM, which is a pulse width modification charge controller. Now, the panel setup that I have, and again, this is kind of the beginning. This is kind of the earlier technology that they had, which was, I have a panel that at its maximum voltage is 18 volts. And so you could theoretically take that panel and just stick it onto a 12-volt battery system, and it would charge the battery. If you left it on there, it would have the possibility of overcharging or overcurrent, because you'd want to basically regulate the amount of power going to the battery. So if you're sitting there, and let's say it's directly in the sun, and it has 18 volts coming out of the panel, and you sat there and touched it on and off of the battery, just quickly to keep it from overcharging the battery. So that's what a pulse width modification charge controller does, is that it basically turns the power from the panel on and off to keep the battery at its proper charging. So it doesn't really do anything with the voltage. It's basically like a light switch, and it just turns it off and on, and turns it on less and less and less until the battery is fully charged. The problem with those are, is that, you know, when you have a solar panel in the sun, the voltage degrades. If you have shade, there's tons of reasons that your voltage will go down, and the battery will have a harder and harder time charging, or sorry, the solar panels will have a harder and harder time charging the battery as the voltage gets closer to the actual voltage of the battery. Cause we're only talking about, you know, extra 4 volts over at peak. So what you end up with is, you end up with a panel that is relatively the same in peak conditions, but as you start to lose that, you actually end up kind of losing power, especially if the actual panel voltage goes below the voltage of what you're trying to charge, it will no longer be able to charge it. So they have since then invented a different style of charge controller, which is called an MPPT, which is a multiple power point tracking charge controller. Now, this is really some beautiful technology, because what they did was, is they took any DC system, and it runs into this. And what it does is it actually changes the voltage and steps it down to the proper voltage to charge your battery array, whatever that should be. Generally, those ones can easily switch between 12, 24, and 48 volts. Generally, all MPPT controllers will auto-detect your battery array and put in the proper power, where a PWM needs to be sized and built, which means you need to have panels. You don't want to have – you can have a higher voltage. Like, you can go to a 36-volt panel and put it into a PWM controller. But it will just lose all that power because it's just not really doing anything. It's just doing a light switch, where an MPPT will actually take, you know, a 48-volt system and bring it down to the proper voltage that you would want to use for your battery. So that means that in shaded conditions, when your voltage starts to drop, the controller can then adjust and use the power regardless of what the voltage is. And so it's a tricky little fun thing. Now, what happens with that is that you can still use the same style panels, but again, when we're talking about amps versus volts, what you do is you would put your panels into series again. So so this would increase your voltage. And so, for example, if like my setup that I have now, and the voltage starts to drop, it's going to kind of get really close to what the actual battery voltage is. Now, if I was to take two of them and put them into series, that would give me a much higher voltage, and then use a MPPT charge controller, it would be able to utilize more of the solar array as the sun was setting and as your voltage would drop down. And so what you can do is you can really start to offset your voltage in your panel versus the voltage in your array. They don't need to be tied together anymore and relative to each other, because the charge controller will take whatever voltage that you put in your array, of course, if it's designed to use it, and then bring it down and use almost all of it to basically like a 98% efficiency, and actually take all of that power and then change the voltage of that power and bring it down to the voltage you can charge with, thus using a lot more of it instead of just having it hit the battery regardless of whatever it is. And so so that's kind of, now you'll find that the PWM, it's kind of like, if you're going to do, again, like a van systems, 12 volt, you get the right panel, something smaller, that's kind of like a good spot to start with, because you'll save a lot of money. And but if you're trying to do something bigger like I am, or if you want something that's going to have to deal with more shade or more adverse conditions, then you want to invest into an MPPT charge controller. They're, you know, like I said, more expensive. But what you'll find is that they actually, you know, claim, I still have to check these results, but they claim to have an average harvest of 10 to 30% more than a pulse width modifier charge controller. So again, it's kind of a question of where your, you know, where your array is going to be, how big it is, things like that moving forward. But yes, that's definitely something that you know, as you start going into the larger arrays and you want something that's going to produce power longer throughout the day, then that's kind of where the technology has gone with that.
Yeah, that's a very fascinating look in with what you've been doing with your bus. Yeah. And yeah, I can't wait till we, you know, hear more about it as you build it out and you upgrade your equipment. So yeah, with that, we're going to end this show, but otherwise, you know,
okay.
Hey, I, you know, love to have you back. Can't wait to hear more. And you know, anything you want to add for the audience?
Oh no, I just want to say thank you so much for having me, you know, here and be able to talk about something and spending so much time on. And it's always good to talk to you, Ian. So appreciate it. And thanks you guys for listening.
Yeah. Great talking with you, Sean. And we'll get you back on soon.
Okay.
Take it easy.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right.